Hello, Internet! Welcome to episode 201 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the Second Amendment podcast that is a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and with me, as always, is my very lovely, though you sound very tired, hostess, Erin Paulette.
I am tired. I'm kind of fried because I spent the day out of town. In fact, it was one of those, I need to leave the night before and book a hotel room so that I can get things done. And, you know, the city wasn't really that far away, but you know, I've been busy doing things and peopling, and I really haven't peopled for a year or more. Plus, Florida has just hit that point where it's no longer pleasant, and the humidity has skyrocketed, and so everything is hot and sticky and moist, and it's just, ugh. So that saps my energy and sometimes my will to live. And so, yeah, it's been a very busy day out in the heat, and I'm kind of cooked.
That's Massachusetts. I think all of New England actually just decided to go, you know what? We're skipping spring entirely. We're going to do winter and then go right to summer. It was like,
really,
it was in like the 40s, and sometimes it would go up to the 60s, but it was like, it was spring, but it was very, very chilly early spring all the way up until last week. You know, where like I'm wearing a flannel shirt all the time, and I was still wearing my winter pajamas. And then all of a sudden, now it was in the high 80s all day today and yesterday, and it's supposed to get up into the 90s coming up here. And they didn't really warn us. And so I've been scrambling to find my summer clothing because I've just been perfectly fine with the clothes I've been wearing all winter.
Yeah, so to anyone who wants to come to Florida on vacation, don't come in the summer. Just don't. Because it's crowded, and it's hot, and it's humid, and the bugs are out, and just don't do it. The time to come is right after Christmas. Come between January and like the end of April, because sometime in May, and it varies from year to year, but you know, here we are, just about mid-May is when it got nasty. But yeah, January to April is just a wonderful time because the temperatures are, well, they're cool for us Floridians, but for you folks where it snows, I'm sure you'd find it pleasantly warm.
Oh, it's balmy. Yeah.
And there aren't any bugs, and you know, there aren't many tourists, and so that's definitely the time to come. So, yeah, I'm worn out. I went to the city, even though, you know, the city is just Daytona Beach. It's not a very big city, but yeah, I had to go deal with traffic, and I'm tired. And part of that is because I just don't sleep well in hotels. I don't know how you sleep, but for me, I sort of call it convention sleep because I don't sleep well. I toss and turn, basically, and I'm aware of being awake more than I feel like I'm asleep. But at the same time, I guess because of the anticipation and the adrenaline, it's a lot easier for me to get up because I've got something I'm looking forward to doing. But then when I get home, oh my God, everything crashes because, you know, I'm home. I can take off the clothes. I can put on the sweatpants. And everything just goes, because I don't have to be on anymore. And, whoo, it's caught up to me. So, yeah, I'm tired and maybe a little bit cranky and things like that.
I definitely, my convention thing is I'm not normally an anxious person, but if I am alone in a hotel room, or even in the cases of several instances where I've been like at conventions with like a roommate, but we're both strangers in a strange land. I just get like super duper anxious of the, okay, well, what are we going to do? How are we going to do this? And all that, and the reliance on like, what are we going to do next? And I just get like hyper fixated on the, everything's going to, by next morning, everything's going to go wrong. And I find myself like just, yeah, tossing and turning in bed. I'll get dry mouth. So I'll get up and I'll drink a glass of water and then I'll have to pee. And so I'm just up and down for, it seems like a large portion of the night, but not enough that I am completely wrecked the next morning.
Were you like that when you and I split an Airbnb?
Definitely the one that we were at in
Texas.
Definitely the one that we were at in Texas. I was the first night, and then after that I was like, okay, I'm comfortable now.
Okay.
We just get up, we call an Uber. We ride in and we already know where the convention center is. We know where the press room is and all that. There we go. We go look at guns. We go meet people.
Okay.
But yeah, no, that first night is always, yeah, up to drinking water and peeing.
Well, you're getting lots of practice for your old age.
I mean, that's totally a thing that happens. I still remember hearing my, one of my, my physics professors talking about, astronomy and pointing out the fact that I think it was the Hale-Bopp comet was going by at that point in time. And he was saying, yeah, it's a good time to look at it at like about 2 o'clock in the morning, which is convenient to me because that's about the time I'm getting up to use the bathroom. And I was just kind of thought that was just a funny, funny line. And next thing you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm peeing and I go, Dr. Weirich, he knew it was up.
So speaking of meeting people, one of the the main reason why I went to Daytona and got a hotel room so I'd be bright and fresh and of course have time to transform myself is because I was meeting with a gentleman for a video interview, and his name is Shane Brody. And he's got a public post on his Facebook page. I mean, not only is it marked public, but it literally starts off with the words public post. So I feel fine reading this and sharing this. And this was brought to my attention by a friend of mine. I don't remember who it was. Hi, friend. Thank you for introducing me. But Shane Brody writes the following. Hi, I am looking to interview trans people who are libertarian, republican, politically conservative, religiously conservative, objectivist, independent, contrarian, classic liberal, moderate, or centrist. Interviews would be for a podcast, if audio only, and or a video series. I'm a former leftist activist who is now a registered Republican, a recent graduate of Harvard Divinity School, and I'm also a long-term trans man. I'm very comfortable with interviewing people, and I'd really like to have thoughtful conversations with other trans people about some hot-button political and cultural issues from a non-leftist political perspective. I am traveling around the continent for the next several months doing these interviews. If you are interested in being interviewed, or if you know of any funding sources that might support a project like this, please PM me. And so I got in touch with him, and it turns out that yeah, he's going to be in Florida. And so he made arrangements to swing by Daytona Beach. And we met up in one of the study rooms of a local library. And we talked for about 2.5 hours.
Well, I got to say that is you posted this post in the chat room for me to look over. And as I'm reading it, I'm like, oh, my goodness, is this who you're meeting with? Oh, wow. That is a really interesting byline, especially as I will openly say, as even though I am a cis man, I was raised Democrat and considered myself a Democrat in my very early youth, and then later on I became a registered Republican, and then I got absolutely disgusted with the Republican, and I am now a registered independent, and though I lean libertarian, I find myself disagreeing with the libertarians often as well. So I got a lot of feels for that byline. So was he cool?
He was. He was also kind of stressed because, well, the last time I spoke to him, all right, I don't know why I blanked like that, but obviously I spoke to him before we talked and we coordinated, but when I first spoke to him regarding, hey, I'm interested, he had just left Alaska and was driving through Canada, and I believe he was back at the U.S. border, and you would have some interesting overlaps with him, because at one point he did work for an Alaskan fishery. He didn't work on the boats. He worked in the processing plant.
Oh, neat.
But, I figured, anytime you get to talk about fish, you'd get along. And so, yeah, he used to live in Alaska, and for reasons which I don't know, I didn't think to ask, he decided that he was going to do this project. And so he sold more or less everything. He sold his house. He sold his guns. And when I heard that, I was just, pearl clutching at this. But, well, one, he needed the funding. And two, traveling through Canada sort of contraindicates traveling with firearms, especially not being a Canadian citizen. And so he just decided, and I can't say that he's wrong. He made the right decision for him, although it pains me. But yeah, he sold all of his guns. Now, he said he sold them to a next door neighbor and who bought them basically at cost. So he got a good price for them, and they went to a loving home. So, all right, that's good. But yeah, that was very painful for me to hear. And so, yeah, he posted that like around the 1st of March. And so it was early March when I got in touch with him. And now here we are mid-May, and he's made his way down to Florida. And apparently the previous person he was going to interview basically stood him up. And so he was kind of cranky at first, and that's fine. But he got set up and we got to talking, and it was really more of a conversation than an interview. And so we talked about a lot of things. And honestly, anyone who's a fan of mine, you've heard it all before. You know the things I'm going to say. So when he posts this, and he's going to post it to YouTube, I'm going to drop the link. But, if you've seen my stuff, you've seen it before. But I'm going to post it so that people can watch other interviews he's done. And he's really interested in having conversations with non-far-left trans people and talking about different things. And of course, given who I am, I talked about Second Amendment issues. So yeah, it was only supposed to be for about an hour. We ended up talking for like 2.5. So had a really good, really productive time there, but that used up all of my peopling ability, and then I had to deal with rush hour traffic and other things, and so that's why I'm just kind of right now.
Yeah, I could understand, but oh man, that just seems really, like, I look forward to that, including just
of course you do, number one fan.
And I mean, come on, let's be honest. It's one of those, you go see the Rolling Stones, you hope they play Satisfaction. I like to hear Aaron Paulette's greatest hits.
Well, thank you.
if the stuff you said was totally jive and crap, I don't know if we'd be friends. Here's the greatest host, Aaron Paulette, but discount the jive turkey stuff that she talks. Well, that's really exciting. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what I did, and that's why I'm a bit worn out. And I know I haven't asked you about how you're doing, and I will in a minute, but I'm warning you right now, because once again, I know some awful things happened last week over the weekend, and I'm really not looking forward to talking about them. Mm-hmm. So just be aware that I am reluctant.
Mm-hmm. No, I hear.
Yeah. Okay. So how are you doing, Weird?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. We had a super duper busy weekend that culminated with my wife and daughter just poking at each other one more, like, I don't want to be around either of you people. But then my wife had the brilliant idea to call one of our friends who has a daughter that's like 8 months older than ours and say, hey, would you mind how would you feel about dropping your kid off at our house? And so they could play. And she says, oh, I'm happy to be going out with the other kid to go shopping. Well, I'll pack them both up and ditch one of them at your place. And they just played and had a good time. And suddenly peace, all was right in the world. And then my buddy came over to pick up his daughter, and we were just kind of hanging out, and I had some things to show him around the house. And eventually it was one of those, like, yeah, I'm not really in a hurry to leave. And his daughter came out, hi, Dad, can I stay for dinner? I'm like, I don't really have any dinner plans. And eventually just ended up like, yeah, his whole family came over and we ordered pizzas and we just had pizzas and hung out and all that. So it was a good day. It was a good weekend. Oh, so I am happy, but unfortunately I'm going to have to go from smiling about my good fortune to talking about, unfortunately, the misfortune of others.
Yeah.
So yeah, the other day, to us, I mean, what day was this? Was this, look, 50. So
it was at least Saturday.
Yeah. It says here by my math, it's Saturday. I remember hearing about this and being like, I am running around doing family stuff and I am not interested in tracking this down at this exact moment. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there was a mass shooting at a supermarket in Buffalo, New York, and to further add, I guess, insult to injury, it appears that the shooter was a white supremacist and targeted this specific supermarket because it was a mostly black neighborhood, and with a few exceptions, almost all of the victims were African American. So the shooter,
and he live streamed it. Oh my God.
He did. And actually I will warn anybody, but I found that the reporting was, I was debated whether or not to even have this as the link, but the reporting was really, really, really good. And I liked their sound judgment. Is Concealed Nation was one of the sources that I was reading about information, and their information was really, really good. And they do have a link to the video, or at least some of the video, and it is the unedited video. So if you want to see it in real time, really, if you can see it in real time, I would recommend it. If you can get yourself dispassionate enough to be able to witness this without the sheer horror of what is going on in this, the swiftness of this attack was really sobering, enough that actually Ryan Machad decided to talk about it in Handgun Radio when we were recording the other night, and which surprised me, because as a general rule we stay away from such things. But boy, this guy essentially just rolled up in a car and just hopped out and just started shooting, and was brutal. According to some of the writing, I wasn't actually able to see the actual manifesto. I did want to actually read it for my own eyes rather than read what other people were saying was in it. But supposedly he gave a lot of praise to lots of other spree killers, one of which was the guy in New Zealand who shot up the mosque, and that was also live streamed. And I found that as I'm watching it, it really did remind me of that attack as well. And so This guy was engaged by a security guard. There was I believe they described him as a retired police officer who was acting as armed security for this grocery store, and he engaged him. Some reports are saying that he ended up putting rounds into this guy's trauma plate. He was wearing armor. I have not been able to confirm that because on one hand, it seems to make sense, and there's a lot of evidence pointing out that this guy was armored. But certainly in the video, you can see he's wearing a helmet of some sort and shooting glasses as he gets out of the car. You see him briefly in the rearview mirror of his car, and it's very probable that he would be wearing armor. But also, as far as I can recall, every single mass shooting after Virginia Tech has had reference to load-bearing vests being ballistic vests, and every single time the initial news reports about the attacker wearing armor has been wrong. I can't think of a single instance where someone did have even some cheap AR 500 plates on them, but that absolutely could change at any moment. So it's an ugly situation. Mm-hmm. And just the one thing I wanted to really say myself about this was just how fast it went down. And this was, even though this is in Buffalo, New York, and also according to his manifesto, he made points that he was very interested in targeting Buffalo, both for its minority population, but also because it is an area that is very, very hostile to gun owners. Therefore, mm-hmm. making the chance of him receiving return fire much, much lower. This is absolutely a very, very consistent concern of spree shooters. They want to be the only person shooting rounds downrange. But mm-hmm. this guy came in. He was seems very calculated. I don't know how much he cased the place before he rolled up in full battle rattle. But he goes through. He's shooting people. He's shooting people that are down on the ground. Either people that were wounded, or just to confirm that they are not going to survive this.
Yeah, he made a point of headshotting people because he specifically wanted to kill them.
And ran a reload. Looks like he actually took cover, and reloaded under cover, and all that. And this is just one of those instances of. I do the grocery shopping for my family. When I am at the grocery store, I've got a gun on me, and I don't know what I could have done against this guy. Certainly the security guard was not able to neutralize him. The guy is in good health and has been already arraigned for first degree murder. And so he is looking at life in prison already. And that's before they start putting more charges on. There's talk of hate crimes and mm-hmm. other stuff to further pile on, just to make sure that this guy goes away and goes away forever. And mm-hmm. From all I've seen, I've got no problem with that.
I don't have a solution to this, but I just want to point out that the more coverage we put on these, it seems like the more it encourages other people to do the same thing. But at the same token, I don't exactly feel comfortable saying we should news blackout when this happens and not talk about it. Mm-hmm. I don't have a good answer, but it does seem that ever since Columbine, every single mass shooting or spree shooting has been to some degree egged on by the previous shooters, and I mm-hmm. don't really know how to stop this.
Yeah. And some of it is, yeah, the level of reporting that's going on with that. And certainly I would argue that in the instance of this podcast and in the instance of Concealed Nation, and all that. This is very much in their wheelhouse. This is a, you know, Second Amendment concealed carry group. And I strongly recommend reading the article. They use screen captures from the video, in it, but they have made sure to blur out any either people that could be identified or anything that would see, injuries being done upon people. So it is fairly sanitized as far as you could go with this stuff, but it is being done to, essentially they're really taking a hard line to education on what this looked like and how this went down and what we know about the shooter. So there's that, but you're 100% correct is the daily news, covering this sort of thing. I don't know what to say. Cause on one hand, you know, 10 people were killed in rapid succession. You know, this would be just as much news if there was a boiler explosion at a power plant. Maybe not national news like it is though too. So I'm correcting myself. I will say that one thing that I have discovered is, I've gotten into several true crime, YouTube channels that I will watch while I'm, you know, cooking dinner or, you know, cleaning up around the house. And I have been surprised to find that there are several stories of serial killers that did their killing in the 21st century. It, you know, it seems like, you know, I grew up with, you know, Silence of the Lambs and all mm-hmm. of this stuff. And it seemed like, oh, the 60s, 70s and 80s were just loaded with serial killers. And then sometime in the 90s, they just kind of stopped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was actually a theory, and I do believe it has been disproven, but for a while there was a theory that serial killers had been replaced by the spree killers mm-hmm. because of changes in culture. And then someone else said, no, that's not true. It's just that spree killers are flashier and they get all the news coverage, whereas a lot of serial killers, well, they're either caught early on by really good forensics, or they're really smart and it takes a long time to find them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's absolutely instances of both instances there. But yeah, there was stories of guys that had killed, you know, five or six people as a serial killer. But of course, yeah, they were, you know, five or six people over the course of several years. And then when they get caught, it's not really that big of a news story. Yeah, it is a big news story, but the news media has decided that that's not as sexy as these mm-hmm. spree killers. But I also could give in that probably some of these people absolutely could be serial killers as well, and just the model that Columbine created by accident, I will note, mm-hmm. Columbine themselves were inspired by the Oklahoma City federal building bombing. And their entire intent was to detonate a bomb in the cafeteria during lunchtime and kill their victims with explosions and fire of the school. And they had guns just in case survivors started running out into the parking lot, because they were out in the parking lot when the bombs were supposed to explode. And when they didn't, that was when they just said, well, let's just go in and start shooting people until we kill ourselves. And I will also note that a change in MO seems to be the moment the killer starts taking return fire, they turn the gun on themselves. And that has not been the case in several of these spree shootings that have been happening, where the killer just shoots and then leaves. That's a bit disconcerting, especially with the several trials that we have seen in the last few years of spree killers that had been captured alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got nothing else. It's a very unpleasant topic.
Yeah, I've got nothing else either. I really just kind of put this in the notes because it really doesn't deserve that much more information. It just that there was also a an attack at a church in Southern California. Where is this? Laguna Woods, California. And really the only thing that ties into this is just that, you know, one, that it was an attack on a church, and two, the killer is of Asian descent, and the church itself was an Asian church. So I don't know if race was an issue on that, or if it was just a community issue or what. He was not from the area. He was from Las Vegas. But it's just something to say of the, we just do need to keep aware, because, you know, this previous guy was a white supremacist going after black people. This other guy's Asian, going after Asian people. We have certainly seen some black supremacist groups out there that have expressed a lot of hatred towards whites, et cetera, et cetera. You know, mosque shootings, church shootings, synagogues. Unfortunately, I hate to be doom and gloom, but none of us are safe. All of us have some form of a target on our head as far as somebody who doesn't like what we're doing. And so, yeah, it's something for you to be aware, and a reason to be armed. You know, you may not, I don't know, in the instance of if somebody's wearing body armor and they have a rifle, you know, your chances, if you've just got a little concealed carry pistol, are fairly low. But at the same time, it's better than being completely disarmed and not really knowing what to do if you suddenly
shoot them in the pelvis.
I'm sorry, I talked over you.
Shoot them in the pelvis.
Yes.
I realize that that's going to be a more difficult shot, but if they're wearing plates, well, plates aren't going to cover the pelvis, and if you shatter the pelvis, it's going to be very difficult for them to stand, and it's going to be very painful, and, you know, if they fall, they will have a harder time returning fire.
Mm-hmm.
Please, I don't want you to think I'm saying, oh, well, that's simple, just shoot them in the leg. No, it's not simple. But I want you to at least know that this is an option. This is one of the things I learned from Mag 40, and I cleared it with Mossad. I can talk about this. This is something that came about as the result of the stakeout squad in New York City in the 70s, because there were a lot of robberies of the different bodegas. And so there were two cops who would, you know, stake out these places in the hopes of catching the criminals in the act. And one of the things they learned, and it wasn't because the criminals were wearing vests. I don't believe bulletproof vests were all that common at the time. But one of the police officers really favored a short-barreled 12-gauge. And he realized really quickly that, you know, if you shoot them in the hip, in the pelvis, it takes the leg right out from under them. And most of the time, that ends the fight. And if not, they are really compromised. Mm-hmm. And especially this guy who had a partner, that can make all the difference. So at least you have a plan here if you end up with a spree shooter with plates.
The pelvic girdle shot is certainly something to consider. Also, to go for another, you mentioned Jim Cirillo. This is, you know, for Jeff Cooper, coined the phrase Mozambique drill. I believe it's now referred to as a failure drill, just for political reasons. But the idea of that you would put a pair of rounds into the center of mass of the target, and then immediately recenter on the head and see if the person is going down, and if they're not going down, then you fire on the head. Headshot is going to be much more difficult. But even if the person's wearing a ballistic helmet and the bullet doesn't penetrate it, I got to imagine
you still rung their bell.
Yeah, exactly. You take a round dead center in a ballistic helmet. It may not kill you, but it'll certainly disrupt what you're doing. Very, very much like taking a round to the pelvis. Will it kill you? I mean, eventually you could probably, you know, get a femoral artery hit on there. It may be a lethal shot. But at the same time, it may also just, you know, cripple you and have you be perfectly capable to return fire with your arms and legs. But with that amount of pain and that amount of disability, it's going to rock their world.
Mm-hmm. So one more thing before we close off this topic of the California church shooting, and I can't really call it the good news. There's a bit of a silver lining here, and I realize I'm stretching because five people were wounded and one was killed, but the shooter was stopped by his intended victims. Mm-hmm. Because it happened at a church. So these parishioners basically wrestled him to the ground, got the gun away from him, and then tied him up. I believe the term hogtied was used. Mm-hmm. With electrical cords until the police arrived. And so, you know, my hat is off to them for their courage, because not many people would think to charge someone, because he was full John Woo. He had two handguns and was dual wielding, and you know, very few people would charge a gunman, but but several of the congregants did, and they wrestled him to the ground and they disarmed him and they tied him up, and if they hadn't done that, it would have been so much worse. So absolute kudos to them. And it just goes to show that just because you're unarmed, it doesn't mean you're helpless. You just have to have a plan and what's the phrase? You know, react with violence of action.
Mm-hmm.
So good for them.
Yeah, that's a great thing. Actually, I almost forgot over that. And that really is a absolutely important detail on this story. And it also brings to mind another church shooting, which was the White Settlement Church, where Jack Wilson very decisively and very impressively ended it. But part of what set up Jack Wilson to take that headshot on the guy from about, I think, 15 yards was, I think, what people were able to recreate it, have determined. But one of the church security personnel was immediately confronting the shooter. And unfortunately, that person lost their life. They were killed by him, but then he was taken out before he could actually turn it into a massacre. And that is something to said. I think I remember reading that you've got, you know, 8 to 20 seconds if your femoral artery gets popped before you lose consciousness and die. If you take a bullet directly into the heart, you have a number of seconds where your body will still be able to keep moving and be able to function. And definitely you read about certain trainers will note that to you, because if you are in the fight with somebody, and in this instance, if you know, you're at a church or you're at a supermarket and somebody's not there for you, somebody is there for whoever I can kill. You may be dead, but if you can make something of your life in those last few seconds, that can be. So that is one of those instances of if you are flat-footed and stuck between a gunman and no cover and nothing else to do, charging them might be the best option. It may not be you're in a bad way to begin with, but it's certainly something to keep in your mind. And I find that thinking about these various things, again, like shooting somebody in the pelvis, like putting two rounds in the center of mass and then moving up to the head and taking a sight picture on the head before reevaluating, is absolutely something to keep in your mind, so that you are, instead of a situation where I can't believe this could happen to me, I can't believe this is happening, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening, instead you are going, okay, what are my options?
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of training and mindset. I was recently contacted by Mickey Shook, and he is a concealed carry trainer, or just a trainer in general. He runs a group called Carry Trainer, and he also does a podcast called The Higher Line Podcast. And I sat down to talk with him about those two ventures. So I am pleased to welcome to the Assorted Calibers podcast, Mickey Shook. Mickey Shook is a trainer at Carry Trainer and also is a podcaster at the Higher Line Podcast. How you doing, Mickey?
I'm doing great, Weird. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good. I recently was introduced to your podcast, and I haven't had a chance to listen to a ton of them, but the episodes I've heard are really, really good. Can you tell me a little bit about your show?
Sure. The Higher Line, the thought process behind that name kind of goes a little deeper than just a title for a podcast. We, in our training, strive to walk a higher line, a higher path, not to elevate ourselves above others, but to elevate ourselves above a lesser version of ourselves. I'm a firm believer that the founders of this country made hard choices. I also believe that they were all imperfect people chasing the perfect cause of liberty. So in some sense, that title, The Higher Line, it harkens back to that time in our history where people made hard choices for not just themselves, their families, but thinking about the greater cause of liberty. So the podcast, we talk with folks from Olympic level athletes to professional fighters, professional war fighters, professional business people, champions of industry, champions of science, et cetera, those that have excelled, not just in a financial sense, but those that have elevated themselves against circumstances, against nature, perhaps. I've had friends on that have had major disabilities after traumatic injuries and have gone on to do amazing stuff in life. So that's kind of the premise of the platform of the podcast.
Oh, that is really cool. I've listened to a couple episodes, and they're really good long form interviews.
Cool. I'm glad you checked it out.
And what is your background?
So, dick joke extraordinaire, exotic dance instructor, teaching men to move their hips in new and exciting ways is what I usually tell people. But my background into the space that we're talking about, I got involved in trying to change some firearm laws 15 or so years ago in my region. I live in the state of Illinois, which has some of the most anti-freedom gun laws on the books, on just like a couple East Coast states, but worse in some ways. So I got deeply involved in that to the point that I led an organization that worked with a few other organizations, and ultimately we changed firearm laws here in the state of Illinois, becoming the last state in the nation to create some type of legislation pertaining to the concealed carry of firearms. We were the last state in the nation to do that. So at the same time, I was training. I do not have a background in military or law enforcement. And I am a professional student of combat, not of combat in the sense of marching in an infantry unit or something like that, but interpersonal combat between two human beings. So I study martial arts, things like Brazilian jiu-jitsu and the art of the gun. So we pass that on through our Carry Trainer program.
Oh, that's awesome. And do you train almost exclusively in Illinois, or do you travel?
Oh, no, we are in the entire country pretty much. Every year I travel 35 to 45,000 miles by truck. We've got a target trailer, and we head across the country to various ranges, training facilities, and host classes that include things like of course, the guns, handguns and rifles, but we also do things pertaining to tactical medicine and non-tactical things like CPR. I'm a CPR instructor and an EMT, and we pass on some of those very basic life-saving skills pertaining to general emergency medical care, as well as open hand combatives. So we're in a lot of places other than Illinois.
Oh, that's awesome. And so like when you set up shop, do you tend to be doing just one type of training, or do you just have one day is one day is another? Cause it sounds like you got a wide, plethora of skill sets that you like to teach.
That's a good question. It depends. We kind of work with where we have, available, what we have available rather. If I'm at a range that's a smaller facility, we tailor classes to what's going to work best with what we have. I've got a friend that owns a place in Texas that's a mile of range. It's called The Mile. So naturally, we do the long range rifle stuff there. So it's a tailored type of a setup. And people might call us and say, hey, I'd like you to come to my home range or to our organization, our church, or whatever the organization is, and teach us XYZ. So we can plan things based on the needs of the individual or customers at hand.
Well, I mean, that is absolutely awesome. You guys offer a lot more than I expected. You keep going deeper down. I read some of this on your bio sheet, but you're a man of many talents. That's impressive.
Tell that to my wife, will you, Weird?
I mean,
can I get you an email address or something? You can send
me. We could have our wives talk together. Oddly enough, we may have our greatest fans, and they're not married to us.
That's funny. Yeah, and I'm honored to be able to travel around and do the things that we do. I would only be capable of doing that. I am only capable of doing that because we have so many amazing people that have learned all the different things that we're teaching, and they pass that stuff on to people like me. I'm an avid student. I have trained for literally thousands of hours with mentors, and because of those guys, I'm able to pass that information on to more people. So that's something I'm extremely grateful for.
Well, that is awesome. And I will have in our show notes links to Mickey's podcast and your training, and that'll have schedules on where you guys can people can link up with you. And so, and I highly recommend your podcast. I've really enjoyed it.
I appreciate that you listen to it. I know you're a busy guy.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. That's Mickey Shook.
Thank you.
I found it very, very interesting on the more holistic approach. He's not just pistol and rifle and tactical stuff, but also medical training and things like he does church security, which is very topical to all of this. And I gotta say his podcast is quite interesting. I hadn't heard of it before, and I'll listen to a couple episodes just to prepare for the interview. And yep, I'm hooked.
Well, I mean, fair is fair. When are you going to appear on his podcast?
Oh, that is a good point. I will have to reach out, though I must say I don't know if ACP quite goes up to some of the people. He's got, like, you know, special forces guys and CEOs of larger companies. I don't know. I don't feel worthy.
Well, please don't take this the way it sounds, because I'm just joking, but, well, why didn't you recommend me? After all, I'm such a big deal.
You are a huge deal, Aaron Paulette. You know what? I'll make a connection.
Oh, jeez.
And now you'll have to people.
okay.
Weird Beard, your own personal monkey's paw.
I really was just pulling your chain. That'll teach me.
So we're doing something a little bit different this week, because I found that I really wanted to go straight into Carrie, talking about Carrie Trainor, just because it tied in so well to talking about these mass shootings and the idea of getting trained and getting prepared, and also knowing medical, because the shooter is taken down or all that. Well, there might be some injured people. And I didn't want to cut to the other news that I wanted to talk to right off the bat, but there is other news, Aaron, and it's overall quite good news.
Well, that makes for a refreshing change.
Mm-hmm. Let's see where to start. There's so many of them.
Well, how about we start with NYSERPA versus Bruin, because mm-hmm. one of the things I talked to Shane Brody about, because he asked me, what did Pink Pistols have on the docket for the future? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, it's funny you mentioned docket, because there's this case that's before the Supreme Court, and they're going to be making a ruling very soon. And we filed an amicus brief, and he was very impressed by all of that. And know just how invested I am in this particular ruling, how I worked very closely without, you know, getting completely in their grill with the lawyers who wrote the amicus brief. I'm really invested in this, and it looks like New York State has just about embraced the fatalism that they're going to lose this.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, I found that, listening to, I don't think I listened to all of the oral arguments, but I listened to a great deal of them that were published for NYSERPA. And I was even surprised that, like, Elena Kagan had a lot of very, very interesting questions that surprised me. I don't know which way she might vote on this decision, but I will just say, hearing what I heard her say during the oral arguments of NYSERPA, I would not be shocked if she, I would be very pleasantly surprised if I found out that she voted in favor of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association for this case. But yeah, certainly there are, somebody's reading some tea leaves. Of course, we've got the recent court leak of the preliminary decision for the case that overturns Roe v. Wade. I keep forgetting what the name of that court case is, because we're not an abortion podcast. But there are leaks, and this was a big leak where it's an actual whole draft of a decision was leaked to the press. But we all know that, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. Where there's big leaks, there's also little leaks. So it could be that somebody has heard something and has passed it on to other people. But we'll see. But it looks like, New York is already bracing for NYSERPA to the court to rule in favor of NYSERPA, and they're going to have to scramble. And mm-hmm. I will note that this was exactly what DC did. I'm trying to remember if Chicago also had some knee-jerk laws that they passed to try to make McDonald versus City of Chicago to minimize the damage, so to speak, about that. But I know DC tried to change a lot of laws as to make it that much harder for people to exercise their right. And it's not great to begin with. They still have just the one gun shop, and it's not a gun shop. It's just a dude with an FFL, and you ship a gun from somewhere else in the country to DC. This guy takes it, and then you set up an appointment and he does the transfer for you. And I think he's still charging like $300 just for him to show up and put the gun on the books and transfer it over to you. So that's bad, but there is concealed, I believe, is there a shall issue concealed carry in DC? I keep forgetting on how that went through.
Oh, today is not the day to ask me. I can barely remember my name.
It's not. I'm just thinking about this now on the fly and going, yeah, I should have researched this.
I'm looking at this article and I am seeing the exact same arguments that I heard back in 1987 when Florida was about to go to shell issue. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about shootouts over parking spaces and Wild West and blood in the streets. And so I look at this article and the third sentence in, they're quoting New York City Mayor Eric Adams. This is not Jesse James and the Sundance Kids. By the way, I'm pretty sure the Sundance Kid was one person. Mm-hmm. He's making it sound like it's a boy band. Jesse James and the Sundance Kids. Anyway.
And it was there was the James Gann. There was actually, you know, the two James brothers and all that. And it was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid was that pair. So good job, Mayor Eric Adams. You know nothing about the Wild West and you've let us know that.
Yeah. But he's saying this isn't that. It's not about who can draw the fastest. And, you know, then there's later on some panic mongering about, oh, they could say you don't need a permit at all, which, I mean, yes, they could.
And?
Are they likely to do that? Probably not. I don't think so. But then at the very end, and this is obviously been said by someone who I feel very confident in saying that Mayor Adams has never owned a gun, has never shot a gun in his life. And he says, for those who are stating that if all the bad guys have guns, let's equal it out by having all the good guys have guns, that is just so dumb. There's my sarcasm font, he said. There's a tendency that people believe that if they've got a gun, why have it if I'm not using it? That's just the mindset of carrying a gun. He truly believes that people who own a gun are going to go, well, if I'm not shooting with it, what's the good in carrying it? And, okay, I'm not going to say that that never happens because there are all sorts of people in the world and some of them are mass murdering psychopaths. But the majority of people don't do that sort of thing mm-hmm. for the same reason that you've got people carrying pocket knives, not in New York, but there are people who are carrying pocket knives and they aren't going, hey, I've got a knife, but why am I carrying it if I'm not stabbing people? You know, they don't go on a stabbing spree. Most people just want to be left alone and will leave other people alone. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, this guy is just it. I don't know if he truly believes this and is very sheltered, or if this is just echoing all of the typical anti-gun tropes and panic mongering in order to get people to listen to him.
I don't know.
They're both pretty bad.
As someone who occasionally debates anti-gunners, I find that sometimes just simply reframing when someone states a panic thing that is no big deal, just reframe it on them. Like, again, they could say you don't need a permit at all. So what does a permit do? Permits themselves are completely worthless, and there are now 25 states that have said, yeah, we don't really need those anymore, and A, the sky has not fallen, and B, yeah, no, it works out just fine. And another angle that I've really gotten some people to really kind of shift gears in a very, very rapid sense, and it's fun watching it happen, is people talking about, well, these guns are weapons of war only meant to kill people. I'll say, what's wrong with killing people? I'm not saying we're just killing people at random, but I am saying that in the United States and all 50 states, that guy that was shooting Buffalo, New York, it's anti-gun. You can't even carry a pocket knife there. But if that security guard had shot someone in the head, shot that guy in the head and killed him, or if just some random person in there, even if they were someone that didn't have a permit for the gun and shot him in the head and killed him, yeah, they'd probably, you know, be charged with illegally carrying a gun. They would not be charged with murder for shooting a guy who was engaging in a spree killing. And that goes for Japan, England, Swaziland, any place in the world. I have not been able to find a place where it is illegal to kill somebody in self-defense. A whole bunch of places, England being a disgusting example of it, is they make it very, very difficult to legally kill somebody in self-defense, where essentially any offensive weapon whatsoever used to defend yourself is a crime in on itself, but defending yourself from someone doing you harm is not expressly illegal. And mm-hmm. So the idea that, oh, that gun is meant for killing people. Yeah. Yep. That's the whole point. If someone's going to be doing something where I am legally justified to kill them, and I have decided that that is the best course of action, then yes, I don't want a target gun. I would not like a duck gun. I would not like something designed that's, you know, heavy and used for shooting really, really long range for someone who is right there threatening my life. Nope. I would like a gun that is designed to easily dispatch another human being, because that is legal and that is the course of action. Right tool for the job. I just changed the battery in one of my daughter's toys and it had two screws in the back, so I used a screwdriver. Right tool for the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know of any nation on earth. There might be one, but I don't know of any nation on earth that does not acknowledge the unfortunate necessity of justifiable homicide in pursuit of self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be pretty universal.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and reach out to us if you know of some place on this. I think it would be hilarious because I think it would be like, oh yeah, no, there's this like island in the South Pacific that is a small nation of like a million people that, yeah, no, killing in self-defense is illegal. Oh, interesting.
I mean, the only thing that came to mind briefly was Vatican City, but then I realized the Swiss Guard are armed as...
Yes. Yes, they're wearing goofy outfits. They may look like rodeo clowns, but they've got all sorts of really, really cool stuff underneath those very, very silly outfits.
Oh yeah, okay. They've got ceremonial halberds to be sure, but I've seen some behind the scenes videos, and they've got some very impressive armories of very nice fully automatic weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the Pope has a pretty nice standing army, if small.
Well, shall we switch coasts, Aaron? Let's see which coast has the sweeter tears.
Sure. What did California do now?
California had a ban on sale of guns to people under the age of 21. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has now said that, oh, this was just San Francisco, or no. Oh no, he's San Francisco based. Sorry. They have ruled that's unconstitutional. They can't do it.
I'm so glad I'm not a teenager anymore for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there just seems to be this legal hole that 18 to 21 year olds fall into, where you are legally an adult, but you're not old enough to be responsible enough to own a gun. And so if you're living by yourself, you really can't defend yourself. And that's terrible. Meanwhile, you could be called up by selective service or just join the military at age 18. And then, you know, a few short weeks later, you know, you've got a fully automatic grenade launcher. It doesn't make sense.
No.
You know, you're old enough to command these, you know, really powerful weapons in the service of the state, but can you personally own a gun? I mean, a lot of these states do have exemptions for these young people who are in the military, but honestly, I would count on California not being one of those.
Well, it's also for handguns specifically, it is federal law that you can't. So any FFL cannot transfer a handgun to someone who is under the age of 21. And so you may have an exemption, and there's lots of states where it is perfectly legal for somebody under, you know, under the age of 21 to own and or even carry a handgun, but they would need to have it bought for them by someone mm-hmm. who is 21 or older, and then mm-hmm. and then legally transferred to them in that awful gray area where two perfectly legal gun owners can exchange a firearm, and is it that was recently purchased under a 4473, and is it a straw buy or is it not a straw buy? Which the fact that people have gone to prison for doing that, even though both people can legally possess a firearm, is aggravating to me. There's the letter of the law and there's the spirit of the law, and that the background check bill was not designed so that someone couldn't transfer a firearm to another perfectly legal person. But either way, this is going through, and the tears are wonderful. And I specifically grabbed this one because Professor Adam Winkler of the University of California is quoted on that. And, it says federal judges could read the tea leaves. In the coming years, the court seems certain to strike down numerous gun safety measures in the name of the Second Amendment. This nice circuit ruling is a harbinger of things to come.
Good.
First up, Adam Winkler cries some more. And two, I hope you're right, because, yeah, you're the bad guys. Just, you are disarming people. You are doing laws that are targeting minorities and the poor. I mean, California's, I just heard the other day, and so I'm speaking a little bit out of school because I didn't realize, but I think they've recently passed a law that states that if a new gun is going to be added to their handgun safety roster, two guns need to be removed. So literally,
what?
They are declaring that that whatever number there's of handguns that are available to Californians for purchase, that number is only going to get smaller as the years move on. The anti-gunners are petty, petty, petty people.
And in a related topic, I believe California has banned the private ownership of sticks.
Yes. Yep. This is a case called Fouts v. Bonta. And it essentially is a banning of weapons being carried in California. And so it goes for, you know, guns and various stuff that are under the elusive California concealed carry permit, but also things like knives, swords, hatchets, bayonets, tomahawks, and club-like weapons. And I got reading about this because a friend of the show with a very common name sent me a tweet for the Firearms Policy Center, where essentially the California Attorney General said billies, including police batons, are particularly susceptible to criminal use and appropriately reserved for trained law enforcement personnel. Sticks.
Oh dear.
I mean, think about that. We were talking about the, and we're going to be talking more about how with the Biden change on what is considered a firearm or not, specifically in the point of parts kits and 80% kits, that Home Depot could instantly become a gun shop if this law is going to be enforced universally. Also, the plumbing section could not only be, you know, selling you a brand new shotgun kit, but it could also be selling you a billy that is only suitable for police use.
Yeah, I mean, basically, isn't any sort of heavy pipe that you can easily carry in your hand and is about a foot and a half long, isn't that a club?
It certainly could be used as one, and quite effectively if you know what you're doing. And I always like to reframe these ridiculous, ridiculous laws. Is you do not see groups like the Brady Campaign, groups like Everytown, groups like the Giffords anti-gun group saying, oh my goodness, can you believe places like California are banned police batons and pepper spray and stun guns and all the various stuff, butterfly knives? You know, can you believe that a simple, you know, 4-inch pocket knife is illegal in New York? That is too far. That is awful. We really just want to ban these horrible assault weapons. No, you don't have that. These anti-gun groups have no problem with this, and they have no problem with, you know, people having to show ID to buy spoons at a store in England, and people getting arrested for having a Swiss Army Victorinox in their pocket while they're going out and about of their business, or a Leatherman multi-tool. These are illegal weapons in the United Kingdom and in many places here in the United States. And so we need to remember that this is another reason why we fight. You may be one of those people. Shoot me an email. We need to talk. A person doesn't have a reason to own something like an AR-15 or something like a Glock 17. But goodness gracious, a pocket knife. There is nothing that they will stop at.
Well, we were just talking about how you can visit the local Home Depot to manufacture a firearm. And in this week's segment of Gun Owners and Other Strangers, David is here to talk more about it.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. In this segment, I'd like to talk about homemade firearms. There's been considerable discussion in the firearms community and internet-based sources in particular regarding the recent ATF decision about homemade firearms, or as the ATF calls them, privately made firearms, aka PMFs. Just to be clear, individuals making firearms for their own use has been legal at the federal level since the country was founded. In most states, it's always been legal as well. However, state and local laws can vary. So if any of our listeners are interested in starting a project of this sort, know before you go is my strongest recommendation. For the love of all that's holy, please do not rely on internet randos. Instead, consult with an attorney who specializes in firearm law, like recurring ACP guest Benjamin Blatt. Prior to 1934 and the passage of the National Firearms Act, Americans could make any type of firearm whatsoever, from a simple slam-fire shotgun all the way up to a machine gun or cannon without let or hindrance from the federal government. Since the passage of that law and its sequels, Americans can still make a wide variety of firearms for personal use as long as they don't cross one of a number of arbitrary legal lines. From the modern perspective, the home-built firearms movement was revitalized by Cody Wilson of Defense Distributed and his 3D-printed Liberator single-shot pistol. He was quickly followed by others. Since then, the 3D-printed firearms community has exploded, along with some of the earlier designs that pushed material science too far too quickly. Thankfully, designers and makers learn from this, and more recent designs are much, much safer and robust. Not to mention the amazing ingenuity shown by people like Ivan the Troll and the late Jay Stark. May his memory be a blessing. Anyone who wants to build a firearm at home has a number of avenues to choose from. Some of the variables that would affect these choices include cost, equipment and tools, skill level, and workspace. For example, all it takes to get parts to build something as simple as a single-shot slam-fire shotgun is a trip to the plumbing section of a local hardware store, followed by a few hours' work with basic hand tools. Next-level designs may require more advanced tools and skills, such as a metal brake for bending receiver flats, a hydraulic press for pressure-fitting barrels or other parts, and possibly various types of welding equipment for getting everything to stay together. Professional-quality designs might necessitate a lathe and a milling machine, as well as the skills to use them effectively. Alternatively, something like the Ghost Gunner CNC mill and the appropriate design files can be used as well. This doesn't even touch on all the excellent 3D printed designs available right now. Some truly remarkable advancements have been made in that area alone, including DIY electrochemical machining for rifled barrels. With the prices on laser metal sintering printers coming down, I wouldn't be surprised to see affordable and capable home benchtop models available within the next few years. For those who are interested in learning how to make firearms at home, from a technical standpoint, this is the best of times. In the political arena, unfortunately, there are some additional challenges already in place, and more are moving through various legislatures at both the state and federal level. Be informed, be careful, but have fun.
When you have to shoot, shoot, don't talk.
That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me, or suggestions for future segments, or a comment on a past segment, please post them on the Assorted Calibers Podcast Facebook or MeWe pages, and Aaron or Weird will make sure I get them. I'm also a contributor on the Blue Collar Prepping blog, which can be found at bluecollarprepping.blogspot.com. We always have openings for interested people who'd like to contribute to the blog. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
All right, again, the Benjamin Blatt's idea of, hey, take a picture of a whole stack of pipes and note that that is a that's an 80% build kit for a slam fire shotgun, and you know, say if it's on Twitter, you know, put the hashtag of the ATF and the Home Depot in there, just so they make sure that they see the this unregulated firearms dealer that is out there, that is a massive national corporation.
Let you and him fight.
Exactly. Oh, you're coming after me, Mr. ATF? Well, what about that guy over there? He's doing it, but even worse.
Let me introduce you to Walmart corporate lawyers.
exactly. Is, yeah, specifically, yeah, Home Depot and Lowe's and like Ace Hardware. And actually, I don't know how Ace Hardware works. Every Ace Hardware I go into looks like a regular hardware store that just has the Ace. I think it might be like some sort of franchising option, but I guarantee there's a big corporate lawyers that they could tap into as well. On the, yeah, go and try to make this completely stupid law, make it stupid towards people who aren't just gun people. Because that's, again, as I said before, anti-gunners are petty people. And the idea of putting like a serial number on a homemade firearm that has more restrictions than a gun that was made by a long time, you know, licensed manufacturer is just petty and awful. And but hey, they're doing it to gun owners. Screw those guys. All right, cool. Now do it to Home Depot. See how they like it. And again, they got deep pockets and they got scores of lawyers.
You might even say they've got depot pockets.
Oh.
Xander, that's for you.
On that note, I am going to thank each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/AssortedCalibersPodcast to sign up. You can get things like the early release of the podcast, but you can also get bonus content, like our hilarious blooper reels. There's jokes even worse than what Aaron just did in there. So much worse. The ACP film tracks and the ACP bag dump.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends, both online and off.
I got a blog. It's called weirdworld.com, and you can hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
And you can find me in all the other different places. But if you're interested in learning more about Sean Brody, the gentleman who interviewed me, he's got a YouTube channel called Other Conversations with Shane. I might have called him Sean. I'm sorry, it's Shane Brody. But anyway, I will include a link to that in the show notes. And of course, as soon as my segment goes live, I'll link that as well.
And thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
You know, it's too late now, and I don't really regret the pun I made, but I should have made a reference to the Home Depot "You Can Do It, We Can Help" slogan in regards to the you know, reporting them to the ATF. I don't know. I had an idea. I don't really know how to execute it. Much like Home Depot, you can assemble your own. So He's like this and I'm like that, and our podcast is sorted. Good night.
Good night.